Not really.
Sure.
I mean, they probably were roving off some land, but not alone.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the story. I want to put the story of Yosef into perspective just for a minute. Yosef, Hatzadik, we call him. Pick me up to ask this question. Yosef is such a tzaddik. How could he possibly come close to sinning with H. Potiphar? It could never be possible. He was actually almost, and as the Gemara brings down, that he was like he was holding out for dear life to not make this mistake. Yosef is a tzaddik. Can you picture the greatest rub in your mind falling prey to some woman who's very non-committal to her husband, and he tries to seduce a man? Like, what rub would possibly... Yosef is a tzaddik. People have a hard time understanding what Yosef Hatzadik, how could he possibly even come close to committing this crime with Ashes Potiphar? But I want to put things into perspective a little bit. Yosef was 17 years old. He was a little younger than
at the time.
He was 17 when he was sold. And I don't know how much time has passed since then. I don't think it's been many years since then.
Probably 1 year.
The Medrash says that he was 17 years old when it happened.
Oh, right.
I mean, maybe not 17 on the spot. But he was sold, whatever. How many times? 6 months to take the travel to Mitzrayim to be promoted. He was certainly under 20. Medrash says he was 17. You picture a 17-year-old boy. So at this point in time, obviously in the stage, you all were 17. Some of you very recently even. Most of you very recently. Myself, a little less recently than you. But it's a time when your body is certainly in a state of excitement. A parental state of excitement sometimes even. And therefore, you have a boy who's in the height, not the height, but he's certainly getting there, of his sexual desire. And he's 17 years old. He's locked in the room with a woman who I assume was an attractive lady. She was certainly very wealthy. They were well-to-do. Who was putting the moves on him. Now, you may say, listen, he has a family. He cares about his family and his family goals. He was just left abandoned by his family. They sold him. They were going to kill him. They sold him. As far as he knows, his father, Yaakov, was in on the plan, even. Why would I say that? Because who in their right mind, and I'm thinking that's not, I'll take it back next week, but right now I'll say this at least, who in their right mind would send their son to see, check on the brothers in a faraway place where I'm not around, who, by the way, hate your guts. Tell me how they're doing. You're setting him up for failure. Yosef must have dawned on it for a second. Why did my dad send me? When they threw the pit, here's a dreamer coming. Let's take him. Right away, grab him, throw him to a pit. Let's kill him. He must have been thinking, why did my father send me here on this ambush? My dad doesn't love me. My brothers totally don't love me. They want to kill me. I'm never going home again. I'm stuck over here. By the way, if I don't do this right now, I'm in big trouble. Because this is my boss, who is trying to seduce me. If I'm with her right now, in this room right now, there's a chance that I'll get fired, if not worse. And I'm a Yetzer Hara, I'm a kid, I'm 17 years old, and there's a pretty woman in front of me, no one's around, no one's going to know about it. This is what's all happening in Yosef's mind right now. And yet, somehow, he manages to escape this trap that would have certainly meant his spiritual falling. And the question is really, how do you do that? Part one, how did he survive giving all these factors we raised already? Part two, the Medrash says by the Kriyas Yamsuf, that, this is the new part, Mike, in here's part last year. The Medrash says by Kriyas Yamsuf, that this Yamsuf splits because of Yosef. What does that mean? It says that as Bnei Yisrael was gathering all the spoils, soon to be spoils, from its tribe, they were going around asking for gifts from all their neighbors, it says in the Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu was not asking for gifts. Moshe Rabbeinu was going and he was grabbing the body of Yosef HaTzadik to bring it with him to bury outside of Mitzrayim. That's what the Medrash says. We have Kevi Yosef close by. It was vandalized about 10 years ago, actually. But it was buried. He's buried nearby. So, and says the Medrash that when Bnei Yisrael came to the Yamsuf, it was not going to split had it not been for Yosef HaTzadik. What is the connection to Yosef HaTzadik and the Kriyas Yamsuf? We'll get to that very soon as well. I want to highlight just one third thing. And what was going on in Yosef's mind when he ran out of this room with his woman? Now, what was he trying to do? He's not wearing his clothing. I mean, at least not part of his clothing. His cloak that he would wear, his stomach was like a sort of a big jacket. I don't know how many layers he had on, but he's running out now without his big cloak. Outside of the house, he just left evidence. When they accuse him later on of being an adult, an attempted rapist, The glove fits. You must find guilty.
Quit.
If it didn't fit, it must have quit. It fit. It was his jacket. It was labeled. Yosef HaTzadik in the back of it.
Doesn't really make sense, though.
It was labeled? It wasn't labeled.
No, no, no. I'm saying, why would it make sense that he was doing something if she had, if she had the jacket?
Because she is a person who is a citizen, and he's a lowlife. He's an Evan. I don't want to give racist examples, but in the time of, let's say, of 80 years ago, if you had a black man who was, you know, his word versus a white woman's word, white woman's going to win. Maybe he tried to sue him, and he ran away, and she grabbed his coat. She would say, he tried raping me. They would lynch him, literally.
Kill a mockingbird.
Very good. The culture of Or HaChaim coming out full circle here. Where were you on that one, Yonah?
I was listening to the shiur.
Proud of you, buddy. Proud of you. Anyways, he was leaving evidence, hard evidence right now, running out of the room, not wearing his cloak anymore. Where is he going to hide, by the way? Where is he going to hide? Where in Mitzrayim is he going to find shelter? Nowhere. Which means, what's he running out for even? Where's he going to? What's he going to do next? Nothing. He's mamash running away, knowing right now that he has no chance of survival. He will be arrested, if not worse. There's no reason why he'll ever leave jail, even. Had not been for Paro's dreams in a week from now, we'll see about those. He'll be in jail, he'll be rotten in jail forever. What was his plan? Why did he run? What was he doing? It's true that I'll say there's an interesting shot, a nice shot. The Sforner brings down, if you notice in the Pasuk, I never noticed before this week, but the Sforner points out that he didn't really run out of the house. He ran out and then walked afterwards. It says, Vayanos. Vayetzechutza. Is that what it says exactly? Those lashon?
Yeah.
He ran out of her room and he walked out of the house. He didn't want to draw any attention to himself. He didn't want to like make it like run. Imagine he's running. Like, what's going on over here? They'll run in and see what's happening, and they'll see the busha of H. Potiphar with Yosef's coat. He was like he had the sanity of mind to run out of the room and then walk calmly out of the house after. Where he was going? I had no idea where he was hoping to go, but he was very much in. He was in control of himself. He was very clear what he was doing, and yet you wonder what was his game plan over here. His game. He knew it was up. There's no one's going to hide this lowly Jew, this Eved. When a respected woman is holding his coat, screaming, rapist, rapist, the place is running around. He's sitting there walking around. How's it going? How's it going, everyone? What are you doing for dinner tonight? What's the shot? What was the plan? So, let's start back just for a minute. We have three questions on the board. Question number one, well, we will now at least. Question number one is, how did he have the ability, the koach? Where'd it come from? Question number two is, what was it with Kriyas Yamsuf? And question number three was, what was his game plan? From this point forward, what was the plan? We'll start with the koach question. Says the Medrash, a wild shot. According to one opinion in the Gemara, he's mamish about to perform the behavior, the relation with Eishes Potiphar. Mamish about to do it. And all of a sudden, comes Yaakov Avinu in the window. Knocks the window. I don't know if he knocked. Caught Yosef's attention. And he holds up the breastplate of the Shvatim. And he says, you see your name over here? It says, Yosef, on these stones. If you go through with this behavior, this will not be here anymore. There will be no Yosef stone. That's it. You'll be done. You'll be out. Yosef sees his vision, and he is shaking. He says that he dug his fingernails, he like stops mid-behavior, according to one opinion of the Gemara, runs out of the room. That is the backdrop to what happened. That's how he had the koach. Says, Michael Fellows last year, my favorite Rebbe, answer my question, I'm adding a little for the poetic license, if you don't mind. I don't understand. In the same, very same parsha, as we have Yosef nearly violating a woman, a married woman, we have another one of his brothers doing the same thing.
Yehuda
commits an Isser D'oraisa. There was no Torah yet, of course, but we know they say the Shvatim kept the Torah. They always get the Torah. He sleeps with his daughter-in-law. Tomorrow, he didn't know. Okay, yeah, he didn't know. But he knew she thought she was a harlot, a prostitute, at very best. Should come along, Yaakov. Same story. Hold the breastplate, point to the stone and says, Yehuda, if you carry through with this action, finished. Why did he stop Yehuda?
Isn't it after anyway?
What's that?
Wasn't he already like a shaver? Like he was already part of the Shvat, and he already had kids and everything.
Yehuda.
Yeah, but at that point though.
I mean, it may be he had kids, but you can still be removed from being part of the Shvatim based on your behavior.
Wasn't he supposed to have
kids at some point? But the action itself, is an inappropriate action. You should know, even Ishbotifar, according to the Medrash, was trying to do something good. She had this vision that she had her sorcerers, people helping her out, and said, this guy and you, one day, are going to make great harmony.
She's going to have,
great descendants. That wasn't her. Maybe it was a daughter. Whatever. The Medrash has a whole discussion about how this is supposed to be. But she was doing according to this Lashma. And in the end, Yosef, in fact, did have from that family children that became, you know, Ephraim, Manasseh, etc. Why did Yaakov only save Yosef and not Yehuda? That was Michael Phelps' bomb kasha last year. I said, I need time to think about it. It's an excellent question. I never thought about the question before. And then when I got to think about it a little more, I realized, as good a question as it is, it has, I think, the wrong premise. I'm not saying it's an insult. I'm saying it's a comedy. It's a great question. We assumed all along that Yaakov Avinu comes and protects his son Yosef. There's a lot of kashas you can ask of him. And we're not going to know Yosef was alive. Right? He thought Yosef was dead. I want to suggest last year, and I'll suggest to you as well, that Yaakov didn't take Yosef and pick him out from Yehuda. But Yosef took Yaakov with him when he left. When he left that time, he was in a pit. And they sold him. He said, I'm in big trouble right now. I'm going to Golis. There's no Jewish influence over here. I'm going to be a dead man walking. Not based on my physical life. My spiritual life is in danger. What can I do to guarantee myself that when I'm in a situation, a great predicament, that's mamish like, I know we're going to be able to pass it, I can take something with me and use it as strength. I get out of jail free card. What can I use? My Abba. My Tati. Picking up a stone. I'm part of the Shvat, the Shiftei Cup. There are 12 children. I'm Rachel's son. I'm part of the Tzadikim. They threw me away, but I'm not different than they are. I'm not abandoning them. They abandoned me, I'm not abandoning my heritage. I will take Yaakov with me. I will grab a symbol in my life that whenever I'm stuck, I will use it. I will bring it out. And through that, I will never fail and drop like I'm about to drop. And as he's about to do it, all of a sudden, his warning radar goes off and boom, comes Yaakov Avinu. Not with Yaakov say so. Because Yosef put him in a recess of his brain that never should he ever fall too low. And if he ever felt like it was happening, he would call upon his last desperate measure, his father's memory, my Yaakov, my Tati, to pull me out of this mess. And when he saw his father, he wasn't shocked. He didn't say, my gosh, Dad, what are you doing here? He said, my gosh, I've almost done it. I've almost fallen so low. And he pulled himself together and he ran out of the house. So I want to suggest to you, now, he knew he was in big trouble when he left. He knew that. He was a dead man. I mean, what am I pointing to here? He had no game plan. He's running without his cloak on anymore. He's got nowhere to go. No one's going to protect him. He left the evidence behind. What's the game plan?
He's giving to you.
I'll get to the very end. What was the game plan? He said to himself, at this point in time, there's really two options I have. Either I might sin, either I may make a big mistake, in which case I could stay here, but he's the HR, he's 17 years old. He's a boy. He's a boy who, like any boy has, will have desires. And all these same things we said before, that he was abandoned by his family, these are all things that are raging in his mind right now, but he knows Yaakov. He says, I don't really care what happens to me next. I don't care. They arrest me, they kill me, I'll die. But I'll die as someone who was faithful to my father, who never one time ever abandoned my heritage. I'm willing to die for it. That's what I have to do. I'll die for it. And frankly, we have, unfortunately, many people in the world who have died for their families, for their heritage. I have nowhere to go. I don't know where to close the eye on afterwards. He certainly had no game plan afterwards how to escape. There would be no lawyer who would get him out of jail. That's it. Okay, I'm dead. What am I going to do? There's no chance I'm going to do this, that's for sure. And that's something I think we can all appreciate, that idea. But I'll tell you even a bigger chiddush than that. A bigger chiddush. I just saw this past year. Well, yesterday I saw it. I was learning with Jeremy Siegel, the Drash Moshe, He has the most wild shot on what he was doing over here. And you're not, when I tell you, you're not going to believe it. He says that there was no question in Yosef's mind. He was Yosef a tzaddik. I asked the question in the beginning. He was a tzaddik. There was zero chance, and I say the word again, zero chance he was ever going to sin with this woman. Zero. So why did he run out? Stay in there and say, please, can I have my clothes back? You know, I know where to go afterwards. I'm not going to do this. You're a very pretty lady. I'm a tzaddik. I'm sorry. My religion doesn't let me do that. Why did he say that? So Moshe Matzah says the following chiddush, nora, that he didn't want to see a person so open to chait. He didn't want to see this woman begging, please sleep with me. Please be with me, because he felt if I watch her enough, putting the pressure on me, I'm never going to do it, but I will be desensitized to Kedusha. I will not surround myself with somebody, even for a few seconds, that is themselves just a ball of tumah. Because the more I watch her desperate, I'm never going to give in. But I'm going to get used to seeing this disgusting thing. And I'll be desensitized to what it means to be a kadosh. Even though I myself will always be a kadosh in this story right now. There was no fear he had of ever giving into this sin. It was a fear he had of being desensitized to what it means to be a kadosh. And he ran out not because he was afraid he'd commit a crime. He was afraid he would lose his kedusha. Not through chait, but through being around someone who stinks. It's like a person who goes into the garbage. You're not going to come to the garbage, but you still smell when you leave. He don't want to smell like garbage. And he ran out of the garbage room knowing when I run out, they're gonna kill me probably. I'd rather die a kadosh with even never a question of what's right to do or what's wrong to do. I don't want to even have a question mark. And to be somewhere where I feel like I'm around people who are disgusting. I'd rather go to jail, I'd rather die. That's a tremendous level. That he shouldn't just be disgusted. He's not going to do anything wrong, according to Moshe Feinstein. He would never do anything wrong. But he just didn't want to be near this disgusting filth. And he basically put his life on the line, knowing there's a good chance, certainly if he doesn't get die, he'll be arrested for sure, never let out of jail, ever. But better I do that than ever even have memories of people who are trying to develop themselves in tumah. Before I get to two, I'll just bring this home for a second, this point. This point, I think, is a point that you have to realize very much. It's a very serious point I'm raising right now. We have a lot of people in our lives we feel very strongly about, or very close with. But sometimes we're with people that are not the best influence upon us. And they're going to call you up on the phone, and they're going to say to you, hey, let's get together, do this, that, or the other thing. And even if you say, I'll go, but I'm not going to do anything at all. I'll go. I won't involve myself in those things at all, but I'll certainly go. So then you are feeling the test of Yosef HaTzadik. I would rather be arrested than put myself in a situation to watch people do things wrong. I'm not going to do it wrong. But the more I watch them, the more it taints me. Says, it brings out a proof. We know that why does someone become a Nazir? When they watch a Sota B'Kilkula. You see a Sota doing things wrong. She drinks wine. She acts like a person she shouldn't be acting like. So you're going to say, I can't have wine anymore. Why? Because you realize that that action, I can't, how can I witness that action? I'm worse for it now. I saw something bad. I didn't do anything bad. I saw something bad. I'm worse for it now. Besides the fact that you'll have memories of maybe. You watch a show with somebody. I didn't do anything wrong. I saw something. Okay. So number one, yesterday I'm reading Slachanu Kiblatanu. I'm saying Baruch Hashem, and I'm thinking about this disgusting scene I saw last week. Last year. By the way, you'll never be able to erase these things from your mind. Ever. I'm telling you from personal knowledge. Ever. They're ingrained in your mind forever. Not only television shows or movies. Whatever you see in your life, you will remember it. Thank God we have memory. Unfortunately, we have memory also. You will not, unless you go and then you go to the doctor and say, remove part of my brain, please. In the folds of your brain are memories. He said, I don't want a memory of this woman groveling for chait, I can't see it. Throw me out, arrest me, kill me. I will not witness this. I will not let it affect me. A tremendous serious nefesh for not even a chait, but for even smelling what it means to be someone who's tummy. A tremendous chit Moshe Feinstein brings down. And unfortunately, we can apply it very much to our lives. But I want to focus now, just for a second, on the Kriyas Yamsuf. Fast forward a number of years. Close to 300 years, let's say. We have now Bnei Israel leaving Mitzrayim, and they're at Kriyas Yamsuf. And they're standing right now, and on one side is a Suf, the Yamsuf, and the other side is a raging army of Paro, and the chariots, and weapons like you would believe. We have this Nebuch, these Jews, these servants, who didn't know how to fight, didn't know anything at all. And they're stuck. And the sea does not split for them. It doesn't split. It's part you don't find in the Chumash. The Medrash says it would not split. Why? Because Baruch Hu says, split sea. And the Malachim say, what do you mean split the sea? What is the difference between these people and these people? These Jews over here, they all stood up over the Avodah Zarah. They were over the Avodah Zarah and they also served idols. These people both served idols. Why are you saving these people for those people? Killing them and saving them? How are you going to do that? So they call Baruch Hu, because of Yosef, I'm going to do it. Because of Yosef. Because Yosef was a Moser Nefesh. You know, so what? He says that they're not similar at all. They're not similar. These people are people who did Avodah Zarah, and they're tummy. But these people who did Avodah Zarah, but they have a DNA inside their body. It's a special DNA, a special gene of Mesiras Nefesh. Because Yosef HaTzadik stood up to a challenge that you and I couldn't even imagine how hard it is. 17 years old, family abandoned him. Never going to... He'll be arrested afterwards. Who cares? I'm not going to live this way. I won't do it. Take my life if you have to. That's the only thing that saved us. That was it. Otherwise, we're not getting through the Yom Tov. We would have died. Says the Medrash. I want to tell you, I saw an article today on ESPN. It was titled, and I don't ask me why I looked at this. I was hoping to find something interesting to talk about. That Tennessee, University of Tennessee.
Oh, the football team.
Is currently under investigation.
Yeah.
For what?
Recruiting.
I'll tell you, recruiting.
Hostesses.
Recruiting inappropriate behavior. They do things wrong in their career. There wasn't anything they did wrong. Somebody did it wrong. They had something called Orange Pride. Tennessee, their color is orange. The Volunteers, the Vols. They made a student ambassador called Orange Pride, both males and females, and their job was threefold, but one part of their job was to recruit and entertain athletes and their families when they come to visit the school. Now, I'm assuming right now it was innocent. The behavior was only innocent and nothing too graphic. I wouldn't talk about it otherwise. I didn't see anything other than that. I'm assuming it was innocent behavior. I want to know why a 17-year-old kid would choose to go to the Orange to the Volunteers in Tennessee. I'll tell you what the girls used to do, the hostesses. What they call hostesses. They used to go to their games, and they would hold up a sign that says, come to Tennessee. Of course, I'm sure they were very pretty. I'm sure they were wearing clothes that any college girl would wear. And a guy on the field sees this pretty girl holding up a sign and says, all right, I'll go to Tennessee. That sounds good to me. And they tell a story that there was the greatest high school team in the country. It had three top players, and two out of three went to Tennessee for these hostesses. As far as I know, they weren't promising anything beyond that. As far as I know, I'm assuming that's the case. Because it's a pretty girl holding up a sign at your football game. So most 17-year-old kids are going to go to that school. Because she wants me to, and she's pretty. You have a 17-year-old boy in a bedroom with a woman who's doing more than holding up a sign for you. And now you do not go to the school. You leave the house and you risk your life. So that's different. That's a non-Jew. That's what people who are full of tumah would do. But a person who's dedicated to God's Baruch Hu, I'd rather die. I'd rather be arrested. I'd rather die. Says God's Baruch Hu, Malachim, that's the difference between these two nations. That nation over there, hold up a sign for them, you're a pretty lady, dressed somewhat scantily, they'll come to you. But my nation, you do anything you want, they won't break it. And if they do break it, by the way, they have in their gene a mysterious nefesh that will always keep them coming back to me. Always. And that's what separates a Jew from a non-Jew. And that's how Yosef became Yosef HaTzadik. It was through that. And I want to tell you, let's play it to our lives right now. We have mysterious nefesh as part of our genes. It's DNA. Whether you like it or not, you have inside of you, from the time of Avraham Avinu, when he walked through the Kishon HaEsh, playing itself out in every generation. And Yosef HaTzadik, we're talking about today, a mysterious nefesh, whether it be to die instead of doing Avodah Zarah, to possibly die instead of doing Gilui Arayos. So I ask you right now, what's your mysterious nefesh this year? What are you doing? How are you different than everyone else in the world right now? Okay, you chose to come to Israel for the year. It's certainly different. People go abroad for many studies as well. What's your mysterious nefesh? When you're tired, you go to sleep. What's your mysterious nefesh? Along with off in the morning, you're tired, you snooze it. Where's your mysterious nefesh? Tired after davening? Take a nap for an hour, which means 10:15, 10:30. Where's your mysterious nefesh? Where are you pushing yourself? Where's the point where you say, how could I do this? I'm Yosef's son. He didn't sleep with a woman in a room, but the two of them alone, no one else in the house even. Where's my mysterious nefesh? What am I doing to make sure that I'm following Yosef Atzadik? I'm not asking you to die. Where's your push? Where's your struggle? When you're tired, you go to bed. When you don't want to learn, you take a break. When do you say to yourself, no, I'm not taking a break. I'm ill saying it right now. I'm not going to nap. I napped the last 3 years. I couldn't wake up on time. Where's your Mesiras Nefesh? If this Parsha is all about why we were separate from everyone else in the world, and I know for sure it's our DNA. You come from the Jewish people, you had Avram and Yosef, and everyone else before you who came and gave their lives for things, and risked their lives for things, and didn't know what the turnout was going to be. And you're sitting here in opportunities to be the best you could be, to not face tests and challenges. You ran away from seeing filth. What's your dormitory room like? What are you doing not in yeshiva? What's your serious nefesh? How often do you stay in the room just because you don't want to be the people embarrassed? You know, you're embarrassed. You see people see you leave. I'm not going to leave the room. I'll stay. I won't drink. I'll stay with you though. Yosef Atzadik was willing to be arrested for that. Am I asked to be arrested for that? Will be uncomfortable? Maybe. It's called serious nefesh. What in the dormitory? What are you doing in the dormitory? In your room. You want to watch things, do things? I promise you, when you watch things, do things, you will remember those things. Whether it be the next day in davening, a month from now, where's your Mesiras Nefesh? You want to see for a second, for a chance, to see what it's like to spend a year in dedication? See how close you can get to God, how close you can feel to God? So I have ups and downs as much, but much more ups and downs. You have ups and downs, but many more ups and downs. So show God, where's your Mesiras Nefesh? The Mitzrim had no Mesiras Nefesh. Are you a Mitzri or are you a Jew? You came to the year, congratulations. So did almost every one of your friends. You want to separate from being a Mitzri and being a Jew is you demonstrate Mesiras Nefesh. Which would be Zocha to take the lesson of Yosef Atzadik, who mamish would have been arrested not to smell filth on his body. Chas Shalom to even be part of it, but even smell it. He showed you how to behave. He showed you what to do. You run. Your clothes are there. Don't go back inside for your clothes. Leave your clothes. You get it later. Call your friend, bring home the clothes for me later on. That's Mesiras Nefesh. When you leave, they can talk all about you. He's older than I. Okay, you know what? You also would have been arrested. You can talk to me. People talk bad about you also. It's okay. You'll get over it. They'll get over it also. This is your chance. Right now, this is Zman of Hanukkah. I want to tie in Pnei Yeshua. I can't tie in Pnei Yeshua, but I'll tell you this in one sentence. Pnei Yeshua says, you know why we have the miracle of the oil? You didn't need the oil. You didn't need it. Something called Tum Hutra Mitzvah. The Jews were all tummy. They didn't need to light the candles. You know why? God told him light candles anyways. Because God wanted to give him a kiss. And he said, I love you so much. You could have made new oil and been tummy. Right now, everyone's tummy. You have no choice. The halachas you're allowed to. It's called Tumah Chutra B'tzibur. But God did a miracle anyways. You know why? Because he gave him the biggest kiss. You don't have to, but I love you so much. You're so dedicated to me. I'm giving you the biggest kiss I can give you. I'm giving you light. Ora Zu Torah. I'm giving you light. I'm giving you Torah. I'm telling you how much I care about you. You're so dedicated to me. I don't know how dedicated I am to you. I will perform miracles for you. Which we zocha to appreciate who our maker is, who our master is, and who our father is. Mincha time.